Welcome to Bird News. I'm Mindy Todd, along with ornithologist Vernon Lox. Morning, Vern.
Good morning, Mindy.
We've got a really interesting hour ahead. We'll hear some interesting research on crows, talk about the upcoming Christmas bird counts, as well as our bird brain quiz, bird call, and, of course, your questions and stories. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. And our email address is birdnews@capeandislands.org. Unusual fall we've got going here, Vern. Leaves are still in many of the trees still.
It's been kind of warm. Yeah. I mean, the weather today and what the forecast is, we just heard that Steve just said, is incredible for, this is what you dream about for rare birds. The wind is, today the wind is west at 15 to 20, 10 to 15. It's southwest tomorrow. This time of year you get blowbacks from the, young birds are on the move and things from the desert southwest. Anyway, it's just setting up to be such a great time to go birding. I wish I could bird more. Anyway, but I'm hoping there's people out listening to this on their cars that will call us today. If you, especially if you're seeing a cave swallow or some sort of vagrant flycatcher, I have high hopes. This is sort of like, I kind of feel like it's Christmas, and yeah. I want the presents to be delivered. So,
well, we actually, somebody did post a picture of a cave swallow up on our Facebook page that they saw of it, I think, Salt Pond?
Nice.
Maybe last week?
Yeah.
So very good.
The cave swallow is a bird that nests in Mexico and just gets into the southwestern United States, into Texas and New Mexico. They nest in Carlsbad Caverns, for example. And in the last 10 years, we've started to find out that in early November, whenever these strong westerly and southwesterly winds happen, cave swallows, for some reason, get blown up to the northeast. Or maybe they're young birds. Most of them are all young birds. It's their first migration. And instead of going to South America where they want to go, they just kind of go with the wind.
They get
like,
confused.
Okay, let's go. I'm going with the tailwind. And they fly here. And, of course, it's very bad for them. Most of them probably don't make it.
Oh, no.
But it's, and we didn't actually know how to separate them until not that long ago. Anyway, it's pretty fascinating.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So with this kind of mild fall that we've seen, does that mean more birds are hanging around than normally would? Or what does it mean for the migration?
You know, it's funny. That's a really good question you just posed, because a lot of birds in their first migration come to the coast from the inland, and some birds, for whatever reason, don't do what the rest of their species does. And there's always people pushing the outside of the envelope, so to speak. And young birds will overwinter successfully until they can't. Mm. So like when we do the Christmas bird counts, you're hoping for a mild season, and you're hoping for no deep freezes or anything, so there's still insects. And birds, like various warblers and things that should have gone south, they're not going to make the winter, but they sort of hang on until it gets really cold and nasty. And you hope that doesn't happen until after the various bird counts that you're in charge of, so you get to count them.
Right.
But it doesn't, they're just pioneers. And it's like great blue herons spend the winter here. Most great blue herons are smart and they go south. They're able to fly. And in a bad winter, the ones that, you know, herons are not set up for cold weather. They lose their heat, their body heat through their bill. They have long beaks. Mm-hmm. They lose it through their legs. And so when it gets cold, It's
not good.
Right. They should have,
instead
of flying 1,500 miles south to Florida, they chanced it to stay here, and in a bad winter, they won't make it.
Mm. So. All right. So right now, waterfowl are arriving? We're seeing lots of different waterfowl?
November is a great time of year. It seems like the rarest land birds, the birds that really screw up and go the wrong way or do something wrong, the biggest, we've birds from South America, birds from Siberia, they show up. Plus, the leaves are falling off the trees. It's easier to see birds. There's less insect food. So it seems like the mega land bird rarities show up at this time of year. And waterfowl are still just arriving, all kinds of, and look at any body of water, and it's fantastic. We have great ducks here, and loons.
All right, here's something you may find surprising. Crows can recognize individual people. They can pick a person out of a crowd, follow them, and remember them, apparently for years. But people, even people who love crows, usually cannot tell the crows apart. Scientists are still trying to figure out why this is. NPR science correspondent and co-host of Radiolab, Robert Krulwich, filed this story for Morning Edition last year.
This is kind of a puzzle. People like Professor Kevin McGowan of Cornell.
Yes, speaking.
Hey there.
And is this Professor John Marsliff of the University of Washington?
It is.
Okay. So both these guys have spent their adult lives studying crows. They're crow scholars.
Yes. Yeah.
Yet I am told that no matter how much you study crows, know crows, and love crows, when crows get together in a crow group, you guys cannot tell one crow from another. People can't tell crows apart.
Oh, that's absolutely true. Yes.
And yet, while we cannot tell one crow from another, crows can tell people apart?
Yeah, that's right. They're much better at it than we are.
We just can't do it as well as they can.
Professor McGowan says that when he handles a baby crow, which he does, he goes up to nests and to band them, the little crow will look at him angrily.
Well, when you're holding them, yeah, they don't look any too happy, and they do more than just look at you. They try to bite you when they can, too.
And then, of course, the baby crow starts to squawk, which sets the parents squawking, and then the neighbors squawking, and then the squawks attract more squawkers. So suddenly you've got 20, maybe 30 birds screaming.
It's like they don't really know why.
And now the whole neighborhood now hates you, right?
Most of my neighbors hate me.
I'm referring to the crow population.
Oh, the crows.
Yeah.
So.
Crows are extremely responsive to other crow behavior. They learn from the reactions of other crows.
And here's the fascinating part. Once a crow sees another crow squawking at a person, yes, they join in automatically, but somehow they will also remember that person that they're squawking at. So should they see you again, they're going to squawk at you again, which will warn a whole new set of crows in that next place, you're a bad guy. So now you got a whole new set of crows that have learned to hate you. And so Professor Marsloff says that after he banded some baby crows near the University of Washington, everywhere he went across the campus, when he went to an automatic teller at the local bank.
And if I go and play tennis in the neighborhood court, if I walk around the block, if I walk over to my neighbors, there are several individuals that will scold me, regardless of what I'm doing.
And Professor McGowan says after he banded some crows near Ithaca, New York, he could be downtown, very far from any crow nest.
And a crow looks down and he sees me and starts yelling. And, I mean, I'm walking on a sidewalk.
Or he could be in a public park. He could be mingling with other people. And then a bunch of crows would suddenly appear.
They would come out of the woods and circle overhead yelling at me.
No.
And you have to understand, this is a public park with had a softball complex and hundreds of people that came there. And, you know, you get kind of paranoid after a while because everywhere I'd go, the crows would be yelling at me and they wouldn't be yelling at other people. And you just kind of get paranoid. And it's not just being paranoid. It's lonely being hated, you know?
But I still don't understand how they do this to you. Like, how do they know who you are when you don't seem to be able to know who they are?
I don't know. At this point, I don't know. Certainly, the crows can do a remarkable job at telling us apart, and we stink at telling them apart.
Well, one way to get into this question, thought Professor Marsloff, is to figure out whether it's our smell or our shape or our voices, our hair. What is it about us that crows focus on? Now, the obvious candidate is, of course, our face. So in Seattle, Marsloff bought a mask.
I picked a caveman mask that was readily available for $10 or something.
And while wearing that mask,
this extreme face,
John Marsloff banded some little crows so the crows could see the mask and learn to fear it and hate it. Then who did he put the mask on?
That's a great question. Anybody who will wear it.
He gave it to old people, young people, bald people, hairy people, female people, male people.
So they had different body sizes, different clothing.
Different ages.
Yeah.
But what they all had in common was that single caveman face. So with his graduate student, Heather Cornell, Marsloff asked people who had never touched a crow to walk through the campus wearing the caveman mask. And with the caveman mask, whoever was wearing it, over and over and over.
All of the time, some birds would scold whoever was wearing that caveman mask.
All of the
and
time?
All of the time.
So we figure they're focusing in on the facial region.
It was the logical conclusion. But then how do you know for sure that it's not something about plastic or just the maskness? So as a control, John bought a Vice President Cheney mask, which was never used to band crows. And then he gave the Cheney mask to people. When they wore that mask,
well, we consistently got strong reactions from the students on campus when they wore
no,
that
no,
mask.
No. I'm just interested in crows here.
Oh, the crows. Yeah. Well, very, very, very low response rate. orders of magnitude lower.
So the crows overwhelmingly reacted to the face that once threatened a crow, the caveman face, not the Dick Cheney face. And then maybe the strongest evidence that crows really do concentrate on faces, when John Marsliff asked some of his people to rotate the mask, to wear the caveman mask on their face upside down, crows who passed by turned upside down to look.
They often turn their head upside down when they look at us when we had that mask on.
And again, this was the way they were doing this in flight.
They would do it in flight, and they would still scold that face.
So, okay, we can say that crows maybe recognize individual humans by our faces, but the question remains, why? Why can they do that when we have such trouble doing it to them? Professor Marsliff says it's because crows need to know about human difference.
They have to know a good person from a bad person. Because in a given neighborhood, one person might feed them and another person might shoot them. And that literally happens in my neighborhood. And so it pays for a crow to pay attention.
While we people, we are not threatened or helped by individual crows. So they do need to know about us, but we don't really need to know about them individually, which may help explain why, says Professor Marsliff, they notice us, but we just don't notice them.
That was NPR's Robert Krulwich. They are so smart, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Crows are amazing. You know, they've done studies on rooks in England and ravens, and they've proven that corvids, when I say crows and jays, actually are a very interesting group of birds. They actually have now DNA evidence to suggest that they all came from Australia. And they've radiated out across the world and colonized everywhere except South America. There are no crows or jays in South America, which they came across Siberia. And they're recognized. Most ornithological unions in the world consider crows avian evolution. In North America, we consider the emberizids, the sparrows, to be the peak because they're so diverse. Most of the rest of the world thinks that corvids, crows, and jays are the peak of avian evolution because they're the smartest birds. Mm. And I guess I'm sort of raving here, but
yeah, no.
There are no jays or crows in South America.
I did not know that. How many different species of crows do we see? We have at least two.
You mean here?
Here.
Yeah. Well, we're rather depauperate here in the eastern North America. We have the American crow, Corvus brachyrhynchus, and then we have the fish crow, which is almost identical. It's like 1 inch smaller. Fish crows are a southern bird that the West Nile virus really impacted corvids more than other birds. And a lot of our American crow populations were reduced by some 90% on the Cape and Islands. And then the fish crows, the southern, which are very common from Woods Hole to Chatham on the south side, they're on the vineyard now. There's only one record for Nantucket. Mm. And fish crows are, I'm amazed when I come to the, I live on Nantucket, so I come here like, wow. They go, they're the uh-oh bird. They go, uh-oh, uh-oh, instead of caw, caw, caw. Fish crows make this completely different sound.
Huh?
And when you see them together, the fish crow is like 1 inch. They're very similar. They're hard to tell, but they're a little browner. They have a smaller bill, but you basically can't identify them because we do have trouble identifying black birds. Mm. In fact, every artist, I've talked to David Sibley, I've talked to a bunch of people. I said, what's the hardest thing to draw? And they all said crows.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. So we can't recognize them because they all look this. They really do look the same. And they're just like,
as we heard, they can tell who we are.
Yeah.
If you have a bird question or a story for us this morning, we'd love to hear from you. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is birdnews@capeandislands.org. We'll put out our bird brain quiz question for this month. What bird did one of our founding fathers propose as our national bird that didn't fly? The idea didn't fly. The bird does. What was that bird? If you think you know, we'll give you the answer a little bit later, but give us a call if you think you know what it is. 866-999-4626 or email birdnews@capeandislands.org.
It's rather timely.
Yes.
That's a hint,
by the way.
Yeah. I wanted to actually just sort of retouch the Nantucket Birding Festival that happened a few weeks ago. We didn't mention that.
Yeah, you had a good
Well, night. We had great weather. Mm-hmm. Great bunch of leaders, and this year the birding wasn't as great as it has been in the past, but we still I mean, everyone had a good time. We ended up finding a new bird for Nantucket and only the sixth record for Massachusetts. We found the smallest North American bird. So it's a hummingbird. What? Hummingbird that nests in the western mountains, and they winter in Central America, called a calliope hummingbird.
Oh, right.
And we were in the community gardens, and anyway, this thing came in, and female little, you know, this is a little green and gray bird. They're
that must have been exciting.
Well, it was exciting when I figured out what it was. It's really, at first it was zipping around, and you just see this little hummer zipping around, like, ah, oh, what is it? What is it? What is it? And you know what the odds are of it being. And then it finally landed on somebody's garden fence, and I was able to get it in the land, and I could actually see its wings coming down, and I got pictures of it, and it started speaking to me. I am a female calliope hummingbird.
That's funny.
Which was, it was a life. It was great to get a new bird like that. It was pretty exciting.
I guess our question isn't all that hard. This I've already got the answer on an email, and I'll tell you that in a second.
It was easy.
Beth is calling from Dennis. Hi, Beth.
Hi. Good morning. Love your show.
Thanks.
And I had a story and a question with it. I was sitting at a marsh one day, and I saw a hawk flying over and a crow behind him. And I thought, oh, the crow is chasing the hawk. You know how different birds will chase the raptors. Well, as I sat there and watched, the hawk would veer off to the left, and the crow was behind him by, I don't know, maybe 10 feet, and he would veer off. And they just kept flying together like this. It was like they were playing. I've never seen anything like it.
They flew
off out of my sight, but I took a couple of pictures because I should have taken a video.
Yeah.
But they were obviously not, the crow wasn't chasing the hawk. It was as if they were practicing, or the crow was. It was almost like they were playing.
Do you know what kind of hawk it was?
I think I've been looking because I took a couple of pictures, but they weren't real clear. But it was either I think a Cooper's hawk. Maybe, or a red-shouldered hawk.
Was the bird bigger or same size as the crow?
He was about the same size, and he does have a white band. Like, I got a picture of him from the top.
It had white on the base of its tail.
There was a white stripe right at the end of his body, but before the tail.
Right, that's a northern harrier.
Oh, it is?
Yep.
Okay.
You've described it perfectly, and you actually described exactly what they were doing perfectly. They were, in fact, playing.
Wow.
Crows are funsters.
Wow.
They like to. They do play, and so do hawks. You know, they're just like, okay, come after me, and, let's...
Chase me, I'll chase you.
Yeah, they're probably both young birds working on their flying skills, and you were watching them playing.
That's exactly what it looked like.
I think that's...
It was like follow the leader. It was so fun to watch.
Doesn't that make you wish you could fly? I'm like, wow, I want to do that.
Yeah,
that's like very cool.
All right. Beth, thanks. Did you have a question,
too? I could just one more story about a crow. I was also at this same place, and there were little mounds of high grass. They almost looked like little volcanoes, and there were two crows on this little mound, and one was at the top, and one was just below him. And I was watching through my binoculars because I didn't know what they were doing. It looked like they were trying to peck, some food or whatever. And all of a sudden, the crow that was closer to the top picked up his one foot and shoved the other one, and the other one rolled down the hill.
King of the mountain.
Funny.
Another game they were playing.
I'm impressed that you have binoculars. You know, crows actually engage in all sorts of fun like that.
Oh, my gosh. It was hysterical to see this.
I have a bird feed.
Just got back up and didn't try to get up again. But, I mean, he literally picked up his one foot and shoved him.
That's
it was like king of the hill.
Yep.
Yeah, that's
what they were doing, right?
Yep. Yeah. I have a bird feeder over in Nantucket, and I have crows that come in, and they hang on their feet, and they fall upside down on the ground, and there's crows below them, and they're hanging completely inverted, going, look what I can do.
They're
talking to you. It's very funny.
Beth, thanks for the call. We've got immediately we got answers on our bird brain quiz, which is, what bird did one of our founding fathers propose as our national bird? And that, of course, is a turkey. And Louisa got that right, and so did Diane. And Diane also said Ben Franklin, of course, was the one who thought maybe we should.
So was that too easy?
I think it was, because immediately.
No, but that's great. I'm glad
people
know this.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ben Franklin proposed, instead of our national bird being the bald eagle, he proposed the American turkey.
Yeah.
And he was overruled. I don't know why, because bald eagles are actually, You know, the more you know, they actually eat. They're almost like a big vulture. They eat dead stuff. They're not really. A golden eagle would have been a better choice, except those. Anyway.
Yeah, the turkey.
I'm impressed that we got an answer. I don't think we've ever had an answer this fast.
No, not this fast.
Which either means we're too easy on the question.
I think this was an easy one this time.
Well,
we've
got
some harder questions.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Good work on the right answer.
Exactly.
And we'll be eating those birds this at the end of the month, at least.
That's right, yeah.
Although I will not be.
You're going to Africa.
I'll be eating helmeted guinea fowl for Thanksgiving in Africa, which I'm very excited.
Cool. Yeah, we'll be looking forward to that slideshow when you get back.
I'll be taking my camera.
Yeah, getting lots of pictures of birds that we don't see around here.
That's for sure.
866-999-4626 is our toll-free number for your bird questions or stories. 866-999-4626. Our email address is birdnews@capeandislands.org. And we've got Julie calling from Dennis. Hi, Julie.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. I had a little story about a crow. About 2 years ago, I pulled into my driveway and heard and saw, I'd say at least 100 crows squawking their heads off, circling, and sort of followed them. And in my neighbor's backyard, I found her looking at her bamboo wood chime with a crow stuck in the chimes, and it had gotten itself tangled up in the fishing line that the chimes were hanging from. And fortunately, my husband was home, and he was tall enough to wrap the bird in a towel, and we cut the line and freed the bird and kind of popped it down on the ground, and it was kind of shook itself off and hopped up to a low branch and kind of got itself acclimated and flew away. And as soon as it flew away, the hundreds of crows that were in distress over its little buddy being in distress flew off as well. Hmm. And I just thought it was sort of a remarkable show of kinship and friendship in the crow family.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why most people in the world consider them the pinnacle of avian evolution. They are smart. They learn. They help their buddies, so to speak. I mean, whenever a crow is in distress like that, they get together. You know, they're trying to help it, but they also are all learning from this experience. Like when a red-tailed hawk takes a baby crow out of a nest, they go absolutely. You know, crows during the breeding season, they defend territories, but all that goes out the window when something, and they all come together. It's amazing. Crows are able to communicate over these long distances, and they band together. They're like tribal. They're almost like they're more advanced than humans. Who knows?
Who knows? Yeah. Julie, thanks for calling and sharing that. You know, my husband had heard the crows going crazy out in a tree in the back of the yard, and he looked outside, and he thought there was like a baby crying. You know what it was? A fisher cat climbing up to, you know, taking either the eggs or birds out of the nest.
You had a fisher in your yard?
Yeah.
No way.
Climbing the tree, yeah.
Wow.
And all the crows were getting really upset. Fisher didn't seem to mind.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I know. Laura is calling from Hyannis. Hi, Laura.
Hi. Well, I just want to say I love birds, and I certainly love watching them. And one day I was at the park, and there were a bunch of little sparrows, and they were eating, off the grass. And this black crow came in and just, came right upon them. And I thought, oh, he's going to, really scare them or attack them or whatever. And he just, he or she just stood there watching them and never, became aggressive. And I just thought, for such a larger bird, you would think that it would have become aggressive with the little birds, but it didn't. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was amazing. And it almost as if the bird did not want to, make any impact.
I don't know if they were babies, it probably would have eaten them, right?
I had
a certain respect for that crow that day. I thought to myself, we have such a violent society, and these birds, they don't always appear that way, and I thought that was pretty interesting.
Great observations. I think you may anthropomorphize a bit here with crows love to eat other birds. I've seen them do it.
One that day did not.
He was full.
No, that one was sneaky, and he even conned you into thinking he was cool.
and by the way, I don't.
But he was. Believe me, if he had a chance,
I think they're smart.
Yeah. They fooled me. It's like great blackback gulls sitting next to a group of terns, and they just like they're not interested, and then all of a sudden, wham, they reach over, they get I've seen them do too many bad things to believe that that bird wasn't really. He was waiting for something to happen.
Scoping
there.
It out.
He was just hanging, hoping that one of the, you know. But anyway, I like your thoughts are very nice and you're peaceful, and that's good. We need more people like that.
Adam is calling from Barnstable. Hi, Adam.
Yes, good morning. How are you?
Good.
A few weeks ago, saw some turkeys engaged in some very strange play behavior. I don't know what else to call it. I was driving in Kituit and stopped on an off-road to let a flock of turkeys cross. Most of them appeared to be young, sub-adults. And I noticed that one of them was carrying something in its mouth, and looked a little bit closer and saw that it was a white irrigation flag, the little plastic and wire flags that people stick on their sprinkler heads on their lawns to prevent lawnmowers and other things from running over them. And the rest of the flock appeared to be chasing after the turkey with the flag in its beak.
Yep, capture the flag.
It
was probably some research project where they'd flag these rare plants, and the turkey said, what's this? Something different. Turkeys are notorious for, so are crows, actually. I've set these insect traps where I live, and the crows follow me around. They know what I'm doing.
Yeah, smart.
And they end up eating all my stuff. I can't even get any results because the crows know. Turkeys are famous for doing anything that's colorful, different, just what you described. That actually is not at all, that's actually quite common.
So they're curious.
Yeah, something different. Yeah. And they're not eating it. They're playing tag. You're it. Yeah. Give me the flag.
You know? Wow.
And the other ones, whatever you have, I want.
It's exactly. And they're young, so that makes sense. Young birds.
Yeah,
Adam, thanks. Thanks for sharing
good
your story.
Good story. Thanks.
The turkeys here are not really, they're wild, but not really, right?
Yeah, I mean, wild, he goes, quote unquote. Yeah, the turkeys in Missouri and Kansas and places where they hunt them, even in western Massachusetts, are truly wild, and it's very hard to get a look at them. You could never drive up to them in your car. You wouldn't see them on the side of the road. The turkeys that are on the Cape and Islands were reintroduced. They sort of wild. They were almost domesticated turkeys and released them on the vineyard and on the Cape. And our turkeys are really not – they're semi-domesticated. They're not really wild birds. Mm-hmm. And in fact, they rove around in gangs and they cause problems. Yeah. They're big, aggressive birds, you know.
Yeah.
They are tasty.
I expect Lillian calling from Orleans. Hi, Lillian.
Hi there.
Morning.
I have a couple of things to report that you may or may not have observed. That crows apparently will hold court, like a court of justice, by forming a large circle. And then one crow will be in the middle of the circle. There'll be a certain amount of sort of stomping around and as though he's hanging his head. And then that breaks up. And I observed this right at Pleasant Bay Narrows in Orleans.
What time of year did you see this?
Oh, my goodness. You know, I cannot remember.
Ah.
My sense is that it was like this time of year or later. But I don't know. It was so long ago, I can't remember. Excuse me, I'm sorry.
They were mad at that crow for some reason.
No, crows, I would believe almost, I've seen crows do some, I've never seen what you're describing, and I would be fascinated to see that.
Well,
and really am at a loss to explain it, except that perhaps they had the king crow that was holding court, as you suggest. That could be right. I can't refute it, right?
Yeah.
The other thing is there was a book from my father's library a long, long time ago entitled Wild Animals I Have Known. I don't know if you've ever heard of it even.
I have heard of that book, and I'm
trying
to think who wrote it.
Well, one part of it, the was a chapter
in there. Was the Craighead brothers from Wyoming? Or
I couldn't tell you if you said.
I think it was Frank Craighead that wrote that, but I might be wrong anyway.
That's the part I can't remember, but I do remember that title. And one of the things that fascinated me the most of all in there was, as you were saying earlier in your program, the about identifying a man, you know, that, mm-hmm. well, that's a bad one, got to look out for him.
Yeah.
From the kind of call that
they... I get that a lot.
And this, he said that they also, there's an additional particular addition to the call, however many calls or how long or short they are, that indicates not just man, but man with gun.
I just look. It's Ernest Thompson Seton who wrote the book.
Ah, thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, they're smart, you know.
Yeah. No, they absolutely can communicate. They can communicate things. They have a language. Crows mm-hmm. speak crow yeah. better, probably better than we speak English, and they yeah. can communicate things like man with gun.
Yeah. Look out.
They got danger down, you know.
Yeah. Exactly. Lillian, thanks for the call. We appreciate that. 866-999-4626 is our toll free number for your bird comments or questions or stories. 866-999-4626. Our email address is birdnews@capeandislands.org. Janet is calling from West Tisbury. Hi, Janet.
Good morning. This seems to be a crow morning.
Yeah.
I watched in the last month a DVD that I got from West Tisbury Library called A Murder of Crows, and it went into how crows communicate and their family groups, etc. But they did an interesting experiment with them. They exposed young crows in a nest to people with masks, and, of course, the adult birds were alarmed. And later on, with these same crows, they wanted to see if they would recognize the people with the masks. And sure enough, they did, and they act alarmed when they saw mm-hmm. them.
Yeah.
So they can recognize faces.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we had a story about that a little earlier in the program.
I think we've established that.
Yeah, that's
good.
Anyway, and I have some crows that come, and they have a certain call when they want me to feed them.
Are they saying, feed us, Janet, feed us?
And I can actually call them.
And you respond to it.
Yeah.
See, that's the beautiful thing. It works.
Yeah.
They call you and you
them
respond.
If they're not in the neighborhood.
Oh, that's so funny.
Anyway, that's all I've got to say.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Janet, for giving us a call. 866-999-4626. And Natalie, is it Natalie in East Ham? Hi. Natalie, are you there?
Oh, hi. Yes, I'm here.
Excellent.
I have a crow story and a turkey story, if you have time.
Sure, go ahead.
The crow story was many years ago in New Jersey before we became full-time residents up here. And I looked out in the backyard. We had a big old tomcat who was a scrapper and very scarred and tough. And I saw a crow maybe half his size with her wings. I assume it's a she. I thought she's got to be guarding a nest because she was right maybe 4 feet from the cat and with her wings spread and marching on the cat, and the cat was retreating very slowly, but definitely, you know, I'm not going to mess with this bird. And it was quite a sight.
Yeah.
Tough crow. I love crows, and I'm so glad to hear them being talked about this morning because they get a bad rap, I think.
That's very true.
Right, that's true. Yeah, so, well, Natalie, thanks for that. And yeah, that makes sense. You see the crows chasing the big crow,
When I was a younger man, I actually climbed up to several crow nests in my youth and actually removed a crow from the nest one time, and I've never been in fear of my life so much. The crows are actually, I almost fell off. I mean, they're incredible in defense of their young.
Yeah.
So
And Natalie, did you say you had a story? Oh, she's gone. Okay. Jay is calling from Harwich. Hi, Jay.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good.
Well, I'm loving your show. I wanted to share with you a story. Many years ago, I was working and living on the Elizabeth Islands, and I was walking.
Which one?
Noshon.
Okay, thanks.
And so I'm hiking through the woods by myself one autumn afternoon, and I came up over a sort of a rise and in a beech forest over there. And there was just this bunch of crows just on the forest floor, and they were kind of murmuring to each other. And it was really creepy and strange. And I walked towards them, and they kind of moved away. As I walked by them, they moved quietly away and sort of murmured, and I walked past them. They never flew or anything. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget that experience. It was amazing.
Yeah. I think we've all watched, you know, the Alfred Hitchcock's Birds. You know, you get a little creeped out when you have all these birds.
No, I wonder what was going on with those crows. Yeah. I mean, they didn't appear to be eating like a deer, a kill or something.
No, I don't think so, and they weren't eating beech nuts or anything. I don't know. Maybe they were, but this was in the 80s, so it was a long time ago. But they did, you know, they sort of hopped away from me, but they didn't fly away, and they were, you know, very inquisitive.
Yeah, their behaviors are fascinating.
Yeah.
And that's I don't know what you saw, but that's cool. I wish I was there.
Jay, thanks for sharing the story. Appreciate that. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, birdnews@capeandislands.org. Earl is calling from Brewster. Hi, Earl.
Hi, Mindy. My story goes way back to 1910, my bird story.
Okay.
Wow, you must be pretty old. Good Lord.
Well, I'm not going to say.
I like your accent, by the way.
Pardon?
You have a lovely lilt to your voice.
Thank you. My grandmother had lost all three of her kids, 4, 6, and 8, with diphtheria. And she was completely out of her mind for 3 months. And they lived on a farm in southern Ohio. And one morning she came out, and she noticed on a fence post, the bird was singing crazily. And she thought, that's not right. And she looked down, and there was a snake that had charmed the bird, trying to get it to fall off. And she got a hoe, went out, killed the snake, and the bird came to his senses and flew away. And she thought, you know, I saved a life. And she regained her mental capacity. That's my story.
Wow. Earl.
Wow,
thanks
Earl.
Thanks for sharing that.
I never heard anything like that before.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Yeah, thanks for calling. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. Or you can email us birdnews@capeandislands.org. We've got two bird calls this month. Usually we have one, but this time we have two.
Excellent.
Because these are two birds I guess we're hearing now. You're going to tell us about the northern mockingbird is one.
Oh.
Let's hear that. What do you think?
Oh, I mean, northern mockingbirds are the most, they're in their own, the Mimidae is the name of the family. Mimic thrushes in eastern North America. We've got northern mockingbirds, brown thrashers, and gray catbirds. This bird is one of the top mimics in the entire planet. Mockingbirds are, this last week when it's been warm like today even, they've been singing, and then they can't help themselves. When one sings, the others have to respond. And they mimic everything in the neighborhood. So I love it. In the spring where I live, there aren't many mockingbirds. And I had all of a sudden a mockingbird will arrive, and it'll do 20 different bird songs. Mm. And 10 of those bird songs don't occur where I live.
Oh, wow.
So I know where it came from. Yeah. It tells me where it came from.
Oh, that's cool.
Mockingbirds in New York City. They actually live.
Sirens, yeah. Right.
Yeah, they imitate sirens, the trucks backing up. I mean, they imitate whatever sound they hear.
Wow.
And anyway, yeah. Mockingbirds are fantastic, and we have a lot of them here, and that's and then, nice. They are still singing on warm days.
And one of my little favorite birds, Carolina Wren. Oh,
tea kettle, tea kettle, tea kettle.
I love that.
Or you can alliterate that any way you want. These are highly ventriloquial. They make a whole variety of noises. And they have Carolina wrens are very common in eastern North America, and they make all kinds of sounds. The Carolina wrens that live in New Orleans and Louisiana, they got a southern accent. So
it's
very hard to I'm like, what is that? You know? Yeah. And it's funny that there are regional dialects, and birds just like people have accents and are very different. And Carolina wrens are great. This is a southern bird that has moved in and colonized New England. And in bad winters, it used to be up until the 50s, they would take about 20 to 30 years and they would make it to southern Massachusetts and the islands. And then there'd be a bad winter and they'd die out. And then they'd go all the way back to New Jersey. And it would take another 20 years for them to come up. Now it seems like global warming is real. And they used to be really rare. Now they're actually breeding in Maine and they keep expanding further north. They've learned to take advantage of suet feeders and So Carolina wrens seem to be a permanent fixture now. Of course, and they're not supposed to be migratory, but certainly at this part of the range, they are a little bit.
Yeah, I had a Carolina wren that was at my bird feeders all through the winter, and I stopped feeding in the summer, and it was the little Carolina wren who reminded me to fill the feeders, came to me in the garden on the post there and did a little song, and I said, ah, the Carolina wren is here. I've got to fill the feeders.
So, they're terrific birds.
They're great. Jeff is calling from Eastham. Hi, Jeff.
Hi there. How you doing?
Good.
Good.
Hey, I'm concerning screech owl. I built a screech owl box a year ago and spent the past year cleaning out leaves and squirrels and everything like that. And the other night, around 4:30, I looked out and was delighted to see a little screech owl with his head poked out.
Oh, cool.
Awesome.
And he just stared and stared and stared, and he's been there this whole week now. Every night about 4:30, he pokes his head out.
Is it a red one or a gray one?
It's a red one.
Nice. And have you somehow made it squirrel-proof, the box?
I'm hoping he's... I don't really know what to do. That's why my other question is, how long is he here for? I mean, is he going to be there for the winter, or...?
Well, it could be there for the winter. It could even nest there.
Yeah.
So, but the big problem with... or the it's great, you've got... He moved in for the winter, but if a squirrel can get in there, that will actually... The squirrels will actually eat that owl in the daytime. Mm. So what you have to do at this point... Maybe you build another one, and you have to mount it. You have to mount it. You got it on a tree trunk now?
Yeah, it's up a pine tree.
Right. What you want to do is put a freestanding pole, maybe a 16-foot 4x4 post with a predator guard. You have to make it mammal proof, because raccoons, squirrels are the big problem. If you can, that bird will go to any box you put there, especially if it is mammal-proof.
Can't you get just those like metal things that you put on the hole in the front? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, but no, but if it's on a tree, yeah. I mean, squirrels and...
Well, you know what? It's a dead pine tree, and at some point I'm going to have to relocate the box because I'm sure it's going to go over, maybe not this year.
Exactly.
What if I wrapped it with some aluminum flashing so nothing could climb up there?
That would be great, especially if nothing can jump to it from another tree.
Yeah.
But I've seen, you know, it's great you've got the owl, and now you're like the stew, you know, now you're responsible for that owl. So, yeah.
Can I have the cable turned back on for him?
Well, you don't have to do that. And he's wiping out the mice in your yard and the rats and stuff. They're very cool. And they're amazingly beautiful.
Well, lucky you, Jeff.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah,
Good work.
Thanks for sharing.
So, yep.
All right. Lenny is calling from Falmouth. Hi, Lenny.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right.
I've got a couple of things, some information to fill in, and then one bird-related story. Ernest Thompson Seton is the author of Wild Animals I Have Known. It's published, I think, in the early 1900s.
Yep.
And it's a great book for young readers, well, even adults. And it's very anthropomorphic, I mean, but he's got lots of great information in there, and it's pretty nice. Another book, Rascal, by Sterling North, has the main character is a raccoon, but one of the other leading characters, and this is a nonfiction, is an owl. I can't remember the owl's name, but it lives on top of a church and in the belfry, and Sterling North, as a child, climbs up and befriends this thing, and the crow, I think I said crow, the crow steals all kinds of stuff, which he finds, and it's quite fascinating and a good read for adolescents. And the story that I've got to tell is about, Ben Franklin wanted, as you mentioned at the beginning, the turkey to be our national bird instead of the eagle because of the aggressiveness and, unsavory behavior of of eagles sometimes. And this comes from a time when I was in Southeast Alaska in the 1970s, and I was putting my kayak in the water, and I looked up and I saw this seagull. I mean, just way high up, and they're not high flyers. And I thought, what is this bird doing so high up there? And then I looked, and there were three eagles. And the eagles would dive at the gull and go just underneath it, and then the gull would flap a little higher, and then the next eagle would go under and kind of sort of dive bomb it underneath, and the gull would go higher. And this happened for a long time, and I watched and I watched, and the gull got smaller and smaller and higher up until I was thinking, what are they going to do? They're going to kill it and eat it. And finally, when it was just a speck in the sky, the eagles just flew off. So they were having aggressive fun, and maybe that is befits our national bird. I don't know, but
Where did you live in Southeast Alaska? In Juneau?
This was in Ketchikan.
I used to live in Juneau for a while. So
yeah, well, you probably saw a lot of eagles. I don't know.
I used to love going to the dump. You know, let's go see a couple hundred eagles.
Oh wow, wow, that's interesting. So what do you think those birds were doing, Vern?
I think they were having fun. Yeah, they were probably. I'm surprised the gull got away actually, because I've seen them eat a lot of gulls. They do like. In fact, I live over on Nantucket, and where I sit in my office, I look out at what I call Mount Trashmore, the dump over there. And every once in a while, every gull in the place goes up. I see this cloud of birds, and I know there's a bald eagle flying over because it panicked the gulls. And then I grab my binoculars and go out and find the young eagle flying around. So
they eat a lot of gulls.
Right. I don't know. It sounds like your birds were just having fun.
Yep. All right, Lenny, thanks for sharing the stories with us. We appreciate that. Donna Lee is calling from West Barnstable. Good morning.
Good morning. I have come into this a little bit late, so maybe you've already answered this question. Is there anything? I love the crows. They're so much fun, and there are lots of them around where I am. But is there any way of discouraging them, because they make quite a mess? Mm-hmm. I get perhaps four or five of them in my bird bath at one time, which is funny. I hope I can get a picture of them sometime. But they leave an awful mess. And then another thing they do, which is amusing but a little bit annoying, is that they get on my roof and they peck at the Velux window in the roof and make a tremendous noise. And I looked up and saw this crow glaring at me through the glass, eye to eye.
Wow.
And it was really amusing, but it's a little much sometimes, and especially the thumping on the roof. So I just wondered, is there a way to discourage them a little, at least to some degree, or are they there to stay?
Well, Donna Lee, you know what? Crows are going to be crows. And
nothing you can do.
You know what? You should just enjoy their antics. They're not hurting your house. I don't know. When they're pecking at the skylight, maybe there's some insects on the side. Who knows? Crows are they're little mischief makers.
Yeah.
And they like to play, and they're not doing it to upset you, and you should just enjoy them. They're not hurting the place.
Sorry, we don't have better answer for you.
You know, crows actually do not enjoy a bunch of protections, and people I'm sort of horrified that people shoot crows for no apparent reason other than just to kill them.
Yeah.
And that to me is just like shameful. And if you're going to shoot something, you better eat it.
Yeah.
I just don't get – I think crows are fascinating. I love watching them. I love their antics. I love pretty much everything about them. And they're really smart. You can actually have a relationship with a crow because it will recognize you.
That's right. Because we said they can recognize your face.
They follow me around where I live. I know they're watching me all the time. You know, and I think that's good.
Donna Lee, thanks for the phone call. We didn't talk about the Christmas bird counts. Those are coming up.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when do they start?
I can't believe that it's already – what's today?
November 7th?
Right. Well, the Christmas bird count period starts on – I'm doing a Christmas bird count for kids on December 7th on Nantucket.
November 9th.
December 14th is the start of the Christmas count period. This year is really good for bird counts because the count period is always December 14th to January 5th. And the weekends are really highly sought after to do the counts. Well, this year, the first day of the count period is a Saturday, the 14th. So that will be the Buzzards Bay count, where this area is actually out of the count circle by a few miles in Woods Hole. Pete and Jeremiah Trimble are the compilers of that, and the center of it is basically North Falmouth, and it includes – anyway, it's a great count. The next day, the first Sunday, December 15th, is the Outer Cape Christmas bird count. Blair Nickel is the compiler. That's usually the best count in the state, or all the Cape counts are good. Then the following weekend will be the Mid-Cape count. And then the Nantucket count is Sunday, December 29th, and the Martha's Vineyard count is January 4th, Saturday. Mm-hmm. So, and these counts, everybody, I remember I was a pain in the butt 12-year-old kid when I went on my first Christmas bird count. Nobody starts as an expert.
Right.
And it's a great time for people. If you've never been on a Christmas count, I would encourage you to go. You'll meet some really interesting people and some strange people, but you're going to learn a lot. You're going to actually have a surprising amount of fun.
Yeah.
And it might lead to, my goodness, you're going to be listening to the show and going, wow, I want them to talk about birds.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yes. And now what about the owls? I mean, because if you're going to be checking, you have to get up really early to
There's only a few people that have the special sickness that I sadly have.
And Jeremiah has.
You know, no, right. Yeah. They're more hardcore, you know. Yeah. I'm getting old now.
Yeah, because you have to get up really early.
Well, if you want to see owls, and people say, oh, I've never been owling, I'd love to see owls. Okay. Well, to see owls, of course, on Christmas counts, it's not, you have to go with the weather you're dealt with.
Right.
But when I get serious about seeing owls, then you have a window of a week even, and you wait till conditions are perfect. And perfect conditions are 3 o'clock in the morning, totally windless, calm. There's no cars on the road. You can hear forever. And if you go out in those conditions, look for owls, you're pretty much 100% guaranteed of getting lots of owls.
What about a full moon? Does that help?
Full moons, there. No, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. Actually, it, no. What you want is really the lack of...
I think you could see more, but maybe not.
Mm-hmm. No, well, you know, I mean, I go owling. I bring spotlights. And, I mean, I've had 5 saw-whet owls flying around my head in the... And you put it, light them up and hit them with the camera, and it's like, wow. And these things are the size of a soda
they're
can.
Tiny.
And they are the coolest birds you can imagine. And they're going, you know, they're tooting around over your head, flying around in the dark, and it doesn't get any better than that. You know, it's perfect. So it's a reward for getting up at that ridiculous hour and freezing.
Yeah. How many different kinds of owls do we have here?
Well, the screech owls that our gentleman called about in New Orleans. Screech owls are actually fairly common on the Cape and the Vineyard, but there's none on Nantucket.
Oh.
Great horned owl, the big one, Bubo Bubo, our largest North American owl, are quite common, but they're hard to see. Short, there's long-eared owls. Basically, short-eared, there's a bunch of owls. It's cool. If you want to go owling, then the bird counts are a good way to go.
This is our final episode in our pilot series of
Bird
News on Saturdays. So no, but we want to thank everybody for the feedback they've given us on the program. And as we continue to try to find funding for a weekly Bird News program, your thoughts and comments about Bird News is welcome. birdnews@capeandislands.org. You can also leave messages on our listener line, 508-548-9600, extension 1701. I'm Mindy Todd.
And I'm Vern Locks. Until next time, keep your eyes to the sky.
Bird News is produced by Amy Vince with production assistance from Steve Junker and Jenny Junker. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Theme music is Harvest Time by Mike Marshall and Chris Thiele and is courtesy of Sugar Hill Records. Bird News is a production of WCAI, the Cape and Islands NPR station, a service of WGBH Radio.